it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk.
On demand audio.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Beautiful Wednesday in St. Louis. Sue and I have already pulled our blankets out here in the studio because it's a little chillier. Wow. It was funny, Sue, because I meant to send you the screen capture yesterday. I saw a picture of, I think it might have been Will Scharf and Carolyn on Air Force One on social media. And Carolyn had the blanket, essentially, that I have on right now. It must be chilly on Air Force One. Trump must like it chilly, right? He likes his Diet Cokes, and maybe he likes his office, the temperature that Letterman used to like his studio, which is probably
30 below.
Yeah, it's maybe even a little colder than we have here in our studio this afternoon. Fred, how we doing?
I'm good, good.
Putting the show together. We kind of had a couple of things happen today that were question marks. We're trying to get Jennings on the air. He's got, I told Fred, he's got, you know, a book coming out, and he's got a radio show, and he's got TV. By the way, and I'm trying to put this together right now. I'm doing a little bit of the legwork on this. Fred, I don't know if I've dialed you into this or Sue, but, you know, with Jennings having the book come out in a month, I think it comes out in November, he's doing some, you know, meetings, book signings, etc., and we're trying to arrange that here in St. Louis. The problem is there's, you know, money involved in a budget. We got to buy some books and we need a venue and all that stuff. So, hey, if anyone would like to volunteer all that stuff, I'd love to have you chime in because, look, I think he's a draw and people want to hear what he has to say. And he's probably been the person, if you had to name one person in the last 14, 15 months that's vaulted into political superstardom, it would be Scott Jennings. We got a guy coming on, Jonathan Martin, here in a few minutes, who's from Politico. Jonathan's been at the New York Times. He's been at a lot of different publications. He knows Jennings, and if I asked him that question, he would say definitively Scott Jennings. So anyway, we are working on that. I know that personally, you know, maybe we should go to Busch Stadium and see if they have a room over there. Because he'll be disappointed if we can't, you know, lock something down. It's just a matter of, it's kind of a short time frame, and we're trying to make sure that the dates work. There's a couple of Saturday nights. There's a couple of weeknights. I'm working with his people, and Tricia is working with his people right now.
Well, then I'm sure it'll work.
I hope so. I really do. But it's, you know, it's a little tricky because you got to figure travel out and venue and all this other stuff. All right, so we're going to cover a lot of the things that happened in Washington today and continue to happen in Washington. The president's giving an update on crime right now with Kash Patel. Do you see Andrew Bailey in that room?
I did not.
So far.
No, I haven't seen. We haven't really heard anything about him. And I meant to text him over the weekend just about the Mizzou game and see how he was doing. I wonder if we'll have any ability to get him on the air. It's going to have to be cleared through the DOJ, but I'd love to catch up with him at some point. So he's doing that on crime. We'll likely, you know, go to that if it seems like anything might come out of it that's interesting, but we did cut out of the live broadcast. Ilya Shapiro is going to join us. You know, they had a case before the Supreme Court today on the Voting Rights Act, Section 2, which deals with the redistricting. He'll talk about that and some other things. Obviously, he'll have a reaction to what happened with the Israeli peace deal. Alex Rich, our friend who joins us on a Wednesday, will be here in the next hour. I got a lot of fun stuff for you guys this afternoon that you'll be interested in. We kind of lighten things up in that 4 o'clock hour. And then Dwayne Patterson in the 5 o'clock hour. The other thing that we're going to talk about at 5:30, and this is some of it's a little self-indulgent, but I think it's important to talk about. I live, as you know, Sue, in the Rockwood School District, and we have something that people are going to vote on here in a couple of weeks, Proposition S, and it's a tax levy increase, and they're trying to get information out about it. Look, I have a 10-year-old in this district. We love the district. I'm going to vote for it, okay? Now, but
what does it do?
It raises your taxes is what it does. Oof. But no, it keeps salaries competitive, all these things. Look, I think these districts, they need the money. Here's the difficulty, and I don't know. I've met Dr. Kane, who is the newer superintendent. You know when I met him? You guys mentioned this yesterday. The day that I took that flight in the Blue Angel, He was there. I can't remember why he was there that day, but he was out at the airport, and and he had not even started at Rockwood, and he kind of knew who I was, and I knew who he was. I'm guessing, you know, I told you to tell him he's not, you know, flying into enemy territory here because I want to support it. But here's the point I was going to make. So let's say, Sue, and I think maybe I'd be in a different spot. Let's say I'm in the spot right now I am in my life, right? I own my house. I don't have kids in the district, right?
Yes.
And I know that there's a tax responsibility for everyone, but then I'm looking at the price of my house and how much the taxes are going to go up. And it's significant.
Yeah.
You know, like I had a friend out in Chesterfield that told me how much his was going to go up. And I said, well, my house isn't quite worth what yours is. But yeah, I can see that that's, you know, even for me, I think it would be $700 or $800 a year.
That is a serious.
Well, it is.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's pretty significant. So, but again, what do you do?
Yeah, that's hard.
You know, so I've looked at it, I've studied it, but we'll let him make the case, and I just want people to hear, you know, the facts of it. Everyone's going to have to make their decision, but you know, one of the questions I think I would have is, it's very aggressive. So maybe did they discuss? Maybe they did. How about that levy half the amount? Well, maybe they decide they can't get what they need from that. So we'll have him explain. And I'm definitely, again, I'm voting for it because of my daughter. I'm just telling you right now, that's my personal decision. I know other people might have some questions. Okay, so we had a big media story today, Sue. Did you hear about this?
No, bring it.
Rennie Knott out at KSDK.
What?
Exactly. So this is not being reported. I thought Holloman
would
have.
Wait a minute. He must be. What's the deal?
Let me tell you.
Okay.
We don't know what the deal is.
Oh,
but
then he's too expensive.
That's what I think. But
yeah.
Wait, let me read you what they say.
Okay.
This is in STL Magazine.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Rennie.
Right. I guess Sarah Fenske wrote this story. It says, Rennie Knott parts ways with KSDK in sudden split. The NBC affiliate told staff Wednesday morning that Knott was no longer with the station. So the story says, and usually it's Joe Holloman over at the Post that digs into stories like this. I've been checking. He hasn't written about this yet. But they say morning show anchor Rennie Knott, who, by the way, you know, Rennie's been in the market for a long time. He was a sports anchor.
Yeah.
And then they moved him to the morning. He wasn't on the air this morning at Channel 5. And while reporter Mercedes McKay told the audience she was filling in for the 21-year station veteran, the reality appears to be more complicated. Station brass announced at a staff meeting this morning that Knott is no longer with the station. Knott declined comments, saying he would defer to the station. The Tegna-owned NBC affiliate did not respond to a request for comment. It goes on to say, I didn't know this. He played football at Southern Oregon State College, and he wanted to be a sports writer, but he ended up as sports director before, you know, kind of moving to the morning show. So he celebrated in January of last year, 20 years at KSDK. Now, I just want to talk about this a little bit from a media perspective, because I think it's important. We talk about media bias all the time in these things. I did not know Rennie Knott very well. I've met him. I've done some charity events with him. Always had, you know, very, very pleasant engagements. I think he was one of the best in St. Louis. He was experienced. By the way, I don't know that anyone on TV dresses better than Rennie Knott, because he's outstanding with his wardrobe. I just have to say that as someone who appreciates that. But John Pertzborn is going to join us this week from Fox 2. And John's last day, I don't know if you know this, Sue, John's last day on Fox 2 is next Wednesday. I think it's a week from today.
I do love
he's
me
retiring.
Some Pertzborn.
I do too. But see, the reason I bring it up is because you have, and we in this room get this better than anyone. We know that the media climate has changed significantly in the digital age, and it's tough. You know, this isn't, I was telling somebody at this client soiree, you know, if you go back to the 1980s and KMOX, and when you had that dominating, you have competition, they're charging $1,000, if not more, for an ad, for one 60-second ad on a morning show, right? $1,000. I'm just going to tell you right now, we're not getting that on any station in St. Louis, right? So, you know, the climate's very different. But when you have people like Rennie Knott and John Pertzborn and some others that have, you know, left the anchor chair in the market. So they mentioned at Channel 5, Kay Quinn retired. I guess I didn't know this, but what's his name? Who was the news director? Art Holliday, you know, former sports guy. I guess he took a buyout as well. My guess is, to your point, that, yeah, this is probably a contract-related thing. Either
it reads like it.
It does. But it also reads as, man, that happened quickly, too.
Yeah, it does.
I know that I've had TV people, without naming names, I've had people, and this happened in radio, too, tell me, if you go back to the aftermath of 2008, you know, I've always said this, and I can just be honest with you about myself. I've worked in this industry, you know, full-time since 1987, but I started in 1981 as a student. And I've never made what I would refer to as stupid money in this industry, because there have been people that have made stupid money.
Yeah.
Like, you can even go back to 30 years ago when there were afternoon drive personalities on rock stations that were making a fair amount of money, right?
Yes.
And, you know, we know J.C. Corcoran. We know how much he was making in the late 80s because he has posted his contract on Facebook.
Yes,
so
he has.
He's not too shy about that. I mean, he's pulling down like $500,000 back then, and that was without endorsements, right? So in the aftermath of what happened in the media changes, there were a lot of people, this is the point I was going to make, where they were presented with a choice. You can work here and we're going to pay you a lot less, or you can not work here. And, you know, I don't know if it was a situation like that, but it's a bummer because he's a mainstay on KSDK. Television news is tough. I'm not going to rip TV news because they could turn around and rip radio and say, you guys got your own challenges. We do. We just do. But you also, my concern from a journalistic standpoint, even though, you know, I don't know how much good journalism you're even getting on local television news. I think mostly people watch it for the weather. Isn't that why they watch television news? And the crime reporting and all that. But, Sue, when you have people, look, I can group this even further than Rennie Knott and John Pertzborn. Kevin Killeen leaves a few years ago from KMOX. He'd been in this market for a long time. He goes to work for Steve Ellman in St. Charles. That's a guy that knew where all the bodies were buried at City Hall, right? You don't have anyone that's stepping up and asking questions the way that Kevin did. When you work, and I have this advantage, I was disadvantaged, for example, when I moved to Milwaukee in 1997. I didn't know the market. I didn't know the news. I didn't know what had happened, right? I had to learn all that stuff. I had to learn the political players. When I moved back here to Missouri, the reverse
a while.
Happened.
Can it I takes, point that? I mean,
it, sometimes it takes decades.
Yeah.
So we have stories, and I was trying to think of one at the top of my head. We have stories that come in front of us every day where all of us in this room and a guy like Rennie Knott and John Pertzborn will say, oh, this kind of, remember when this happened in 1995 in St. Louis or whenever it might happen? And there's a connecting of the dots that occurs in a lot of stories. If you have politicians that were in the news, you will remember that these people did this back then. All of this stuff, there's an accumulation of knowledge that comes with the experience. And when you're hiring these kids out of journalism school and they don't even know how to pronounce some of the people's names around here, that begs for, you know, better accountability in journalism, you're not going to get it. So.
And I'm sure he has signed something that says he can't say exactly what happened, but I'm a Facebook friend of his, so I was looking it up, and there are people posting on there. But, you know, I saw
him... I hope it's not like a bad thing. You know,
he liked something that somebody thanked him for all his community service and getting involved in the community.
He was very active
in
that.
And he said, thank you for that. But... oh, I am really sorry.
Look, I would say Elliot Davis is doing some amazing stuff up there on Facebook, independent journalism. Rennie's probably the guy that can, because he's got the sports experience too. So I'm guessing he will not be out of work, but that's the big media story locally here today.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, there have been a couple of, I don't know if it was challenges or rumors that Mike Johnson and Hakeem Jeffries will debate on C-SPAN.
I'll debate Hakeem Jeffries anywhere, anytime, as soon as we get the government open. He's engaging in political theater and stating absurd things. It is the Democrats who voted to shut the government down. Look at the record. 9 times now, the Republicans in Congress, House and Senate, have voted to open the government, and 9 times, Democrats in Congress have voted to close it. All but one. Hakeem Jeffries led the effort in the House. We had this debate on the government shutting down on the House floor. We won. We passed the bill in the House. We sent it to the Senate.
Jonathan Martin is with us, Politico's senior political consultant and columnist. I think I said columnist, meant to say columnist and not consultant. I can't put the words together, J-Mart. How are you this afternoon?
Hey, man, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
What in the world is going to happen here with the government shutdown? Let's start with that. They go back and forth. There seemed to be some reporting last week that some of the administration members were interested in having, you know, a discussion and putting this discussion about the healthcare subsidies on the table if we'd vote to, you know, reopen the government. So where would you handicap all that situation right now?
I don't think we're going to see a breakthrough anytime soon because I don't think the Republicans feel as though they're losing the PR battle. And I think the Democrats are so committed to this because it's the only power they have. And it's the only way of conveying to their base that we hear you and we're standing strong and confronting Trump. It's just a vehicle for Democrats to sort of push back against Trump generally. It just happens to be this is the avenue that they're taking. So I just don't know, absent the politics of this really shifting against one side or the other, why either is going to give in.
Yeah, so where does that leave us? Because at a certain point, you would think that they would reopen the government. But I, to your point, I don't see the, right. the Republicans kind of cave in. They've said, you heard what Speaker Johnson said. I think there was another vote earlier today. There are some Democrats that are interested maybe in having discussions, aren't there?
Yeah, there are, and there's a handful in the Senate, but I think that they're still pretty dug in because they want the Republicans to sort of talk health care, and Republicans have said, we'll talk health care, but not until you guys open the government back up. So they're still at loggerheads, and the public, if we're being totally honest, I don't think cares that much. I mean, I don't think this has broken through with the average voter.
I agree with you. I think you're right about that.
If TSA closed tomorrow at every American airport and the ATC was sent home and the American traveling public couldn't fly, this thing would end in a New York minute.
Yeah.
But as you know, that's not what happens. And most you know, federal services are still ongoing. So
what would you say about, you know, obviously part of the accusation here on the part of the Republicans is Chuck Schumer. He voted for this clean CR in the spring. Things have changed now because he's worried about AOC and a primary.
Sure.
So how would you address the politics of that?
I mean, I think it's very real that Democrats broadly, and Schumer specifically, have got to show their base that they're fighting back. And they see Gavin Newsom being rewarded politically for playing at Trump's game and for swatting at Trump. And he's established himself as the kind of leader of the opposition. And so if you're a Democrat in Congress, you know, it's hard to resist that. And also, I think genuinely, they do feel a sense of outrage about some of what Trump has done and sort of conducting himself. And again, Mark, this is the only vehicle they have to push back.
Yeah.
All right. That they don't control the House, the Senate, and the White House. This is it. This is all I got. You know,
how tough is it for some of these Democrats on Capitol Hill right now to admit on the Middle East peace front that's quite an achievement? I mean, obviously there are things that can happen, and you know, I would anticipate that there will be some challenges because I've been around Middle East peace for a long time. But I mean, look, the guy's getting stuff done, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think of all of the Trump achievements in the first 9 to 10 months, I think a lot of it is it sort of leans heavily into Trump myth-making. This is the one where you actually do have to recognize that Trump, by dint of his, let's say, unusual personality, was able to get the Israelis and Arabs to the table and to get a deal done. Because Trump's able to say, with maximum credibility on the right, Bibi, you got to take the win. And because of his leverage with the Arab states, you know, he's able to basically tell them too, this is the only way that I'm going to, you know, be able to rein in Bibi. You know, he's pretty effective in his own unusual way, right?
Let me ask you this, Jonathan Martin. Let's go to Virginia and the whole Jay Jones situation.
Sure.
From those of us here in the middle of the country, it's a little confusing as to why Democrats have not distanced themselves. Is there a racial factor here that's at play, or what's going on?
Yeah. You know, I think that there's an element to that. Black voters are a key part of the Democratic coalition, and if they abandon one African-American on their ticket, I think there'd be some backlash. Here, I think, is the bigger issue. I think Democrats see Trump getting away with a lot, and they say, why should we play by the old rules and have to dump this guy overboard when Trump's out there, you know, making money off crypto or saying or doing all kinds of things? We're not going to keep playing by the old rules. We're going to play by Trump rules. I think that's the view of Democrats.
Do you think that, I mean, I've seen the polling. Abigail Spanberger has had a pretty significant lead over the Lieutenant Governor Winston Sears. Do you see that tightening, though? Are there some, okay. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Not, I don't think, dramatically. I think if this thing gets down to 5 points, that's probably the best case scenario for the Republicans, because in that case, they have a chance to win the AG race and beat Jay Jones.
Yeah.
I just think Democrats have a huge financial advantage and, you know, a better candidate, frankly, too.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I get that. Unfortunately, I think you even wrote about this in one of your columns, because I always kind of point out that the quality of the candidate matters. And in one of your reference columns, you talked about how, look, you have, you know, Roy Moore and Herschel Walker, although I thought Herschel maybe he was a really nice guy. Christine O'Donnell, all these people that have lost in the past, and those were not good.
Gosh.
You know, Todd Akin here in Missouri, we had that as well, obviously.
You got it. So, this is a 15-year story of mostly Senate races, but also some other races, in which Republicans have given away either competitive states or states that they frankly should win. Claire McCaskill had no business winning that 2012 campaign, a presidential cycle, and she pulled it out. Why? Well, in large part because of the nature of her opponent. I think the Republicans in the Senate have figured this out, and they have smartly, Mark, used Trump to get behind strong candidates early on and sort of try to preemptively stop any of these folks who are going to be surefire losers in the fall.
So 5 weeks ago today, Charlie Kirk was assassinated. I have admitted many, many times on the air that I was I underestimated the reach that he had, and the reaction was overwhelming.
Yes.
And here we are, and you've been around politics a long time. What does this – because this seems like – a lot of people said this seems different, and you're seeing these packed halls now Turning Point USA.
Yeah.
How do you reflect on that from a political standpoint? Because this really does seem to be a movement that is even taking off more. And, you know, obviously her, Erica, Charlie's wife, is just amazing, right? So that's appealing to a lot of people.
He's got a real following.
Yeah.
He's got a real following. I think like a lot of folks who were tragically, cut down their youth, I think his legacy will be enlarged because of that. And I think, you know, because of the talents of his widow, I think they have an opportunity to make Turning Point into a really significant voter engagement and mobilization vehicle on the right. It kind of already was getting there. And I think tragically, sadly, this probably makes it even bigger going forward.
Jonathan Martin, always great to have you on. Are you still able to communicate directly with our mutual friend Scott Jennings, or do you have to go through his people because of his meteoric rise to fame and stardom? Because,
I have to send him a gold embossed envelope on parchment requesting the pleasure of his company. Exactly.
Yeah,
it's difficult to get him now.
It's been interesting. He's got the new book coming out. I'm trying to get him here to St. Louis for an event, so keeping our fingers crossed.
Scott's having the time of his life, man. He's having the time of his life. Exactly.
Jay Mark, great to hook up with you. Thank you.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm hearing a lot of claims out there from Democrats and the legacy media that Republicans are trying to gut the Federal Voting Rights Act. But this is an issue before the Supreme Court that went before the court today on redistricting. And our constitutional expert, Ilya Shapiro, senior fellow and director of constitutional studies at the Manhattan Institute, is back with us this afternoon. Ilya, how are you? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You always catch me in interesting places. I'm taking the metro back home about one stop away.
Well, we'll make it quick then. It sounds like you got to get off to get home. So let's, on this case today, explain, because there's accusations, obviously, that are flying back and forth just politically on this with Republicans versus Democrats. But what is this all about? We are expanding our map here in Missouri, potentially. Does that also, this case that went before the court today, encompass what we're able to do here in Missouri with a map?
Only to the extent that there are racial shenanigans involved. So the court 5 years ago or so got rid of policing partisan gerrymanders. They threw up their hands and said the Constitution is silent about trying to take political advantage. But there's this whole jurisprudence about using race under the Voting Rights Act to make sure that racial minorities can, quote, choose the candidates of have the opportunity to choose the candidates of their choice. It's resulted in kind of a Goldilocks approach to districting. You have to consider race a little bit, but not too much. And the court is dissatisfied with this. And certainly based on argument this morning, it looks like they're going in the same direction, unless you can establish that there's some sort of racially discriminatory intent. If the intent is simply to take political advantage, and if there's racial correlations that happen to coincide with that, that's irrelevant. But it looks like the court is getting out of this sordid business of divvying up people by race and requiring districts to be drawn as minority-majority districts.
Is that something where, usually you have these arguments in the fall right now and then decisions don't come out until, June? Is this something that sort of needs to be expedited because of, the elections next year or not?
Well, the court doesn't like to have make decisions that change electoral rules right before an election. I'm not sure exactly what the drop-dead deadlines are for getting districts in place. Certainly congressmen need to know, candidates need to know where exactly they're running. Some states do have primaries that are before the end of the Supreme Court term, so that could be a problem. We'll see. This is still very early. It's only the second week of the new Supreme Court term, so it's not necessarily the case that they're going to wait until the end of June to decide it, but it's certainly shaping up to be, if they rule as I just described, to be one of the biggest cases of the term.
Yeah, and to me it sounds like, you tell me if my gut instinct is wrong here, that the Republicans may get their way then when it comes to the redistricting, the court sides, but then politically it seems to me that the Democrats are going to try to use that as to their advantage, saying, look what they're doing. They're gutting the Voting Rights Act without anyone really knowing the specifics of what, they're talking about, but you can go out there and that's your talking point because the Supreme Court weighs in on this.
That's right. I mean, and that's where the politics is going to be fought. Now, traditionally, the voter ID issue, another controversy in this area, has been used by both sides to drum out voters without really affecting the results of elections one way or another. So this, like the Shelby County case a number of years ago, 10 years ago now, this will become a political issue. But the thing is, the Democrats complain about so much of what the Supreme Court does, it seems like it would be subsumed into that greater narrative.
Probably. Ilya Shapiro back with us this afternoon. Let me get your thoughts before I let you go, though, on the Middle East peace deal and just what's been happening and how you see this kind of moving forward. Obviously, a big, big day on Monday.
Yeah, well, the last remaining living hostages were released, which is obviously, I mean, thank God. I mean, it's a blessed day. There were a lot of hostages that were killed in captivity, and now, the first four, I don't know why there's only four. There's supposed to be, 25 or 30 more, but Hamas claims not to be able to locate them or what have you. But even of those first four remains, bodies that were due to be turned over, one of them was someone else. So just like with the Bibas family, where they just put in some other corpse, here they're playing shenanigans again. And clearly they're already reneging on the round two of the deal. They're supposed to disarm. They're supposed to give up power. And we're seeing video of them seeking retribution against other Palestinians who they accuse of collaborating or are from rival tribes or what have you, the kind of internal politics, internal rivalries, what have you. So the deal, such as it is, beyond getting the hostages out, the live hostages out, and beyond Israel pulling back a little bit, I'm not sure how much it's going to flesh out. Israel still is destroying the tunnels that they know about. So that's a good thing that the terror tunnels are going to be gone. But in terms of control over Gaza and demilitarization, that's still very much in the air.
This isn't discussed very often in the American media, but isn't there, and this may get into the weeds a little bit, but doesn't Bibi face some sort of internal charges himself in Israel?
He does. And I don't know how the immunities work, whether somebody in power can be charged. Some parallels, I guess, to some of the cases before the Supreme Court involving President Trump. But that was something that President Trump mentioned in his speech in the Knesset. He asked he turned around and asked the president of Israel, not the prime minister, that's Bibi. He asked the president to pardon Bibi because all he's accused of this corruption involves champagne and cigars, things like that. So, Bibi's internal political future is very much to be decided. There's more. Apparently now within Israel, Trump is more popular than Netanyahu.
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all. It really doesn't. I'm really not shocked by that at all. Ilya, you have a great train trip. I hope your stop is coming up if it hasn't come up already. It sounded great. It didn't sound like you were on the metro, so I appreciate that.
the wonders of modern technology. I just got to my, I'm actually speaking outside the station. I'm going to walk home just in time to make it to my my son's soccer game. So
that's awesome, because I never even, Sue, we didn't even hear anything in the background.
No, that was incredible.
That was excellent. Well, have fun at the soccer game. I appreciate it. Thanks, Ilya.
All right. Take,
all right, take care. Here's President Trump, by the way, on the topic. This is what you worry about. You know, obviously, it's great that the hostages are back, and that that's certainly a first step, but it wouldn't take too much for all this to just unfurl, right?
I'm Joshua. How long will it take Hamas to disarm, and can you guarantee that is going to happen?
Well, they're going to disarm. They will disarm. And if they don't disarm, we will disarm them. And it'll happen quickly and perhaps violently. But they will disarm. Do you understand me?
So that's a great position to take, and I like it. But then how will it disarm? Because then the question becomes, will U.S. troops be on the ground? That's people didn't vote for that. I don't think President Trump wants that. But how do you enforce that, and how do you make sure that they disarm? And can you do that with the Israeli forces and the military might that you already have? That's where I think it gets a little tricky. In that same, and this is another one of those days, like I can literally pot up Fox right now, turn up Fox. That's radio lingo, pot up.
Yes.
But he's been taking questions for like a half an hour here at the White House on a variety of topics. Crime was the topic, Kash Patel, and they had a bunch of charts and things like that. We carried some of this before, you know, the start of the 3 o'clock hour and then got back into regular programming. But this is another one of those days where Trump's been on TV almost nonstop. He's been answering questions and fielding, you know, media shoutdowns and stuff like that. So on the shutdown itself,
the Democrats are getting killed on the shutdown because we're closing up programs that are Democrat programs that we were opposed to. So we're being, and they're never going to come back in many cases. And we're going to have a list of them on Friday, closing up some of the most egregious socialist, semi-communist, probably not full communist, we're saving that for New York, but semi-communist programs. And we're closing them up. We're not closing up Republican programs because we think they work.
So no end in sight on that. Newt Gingrich was on Fox this morning saying that, you know, I agree with this to a certain extent. I think they're underestimating, the Democrats are underestimating Trump.
He's very tough. He's very strategic. He's very firm. And I think, frankly, that Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries, who, by the way, live about 1.1 miles apart in Brooklyn, in a city which is about to elect a big government socialist with weird values, their entire worldview is alien from most Americans. So they may think this is cool. Most Americans are not, in the end, going to want to raise spending, increase the deficit, in order to pay for people who, in many cases, aren't willing to work, or are cheating, or are illegal immigrants. And the Democrats don't seem to get it.
So on that front of Mamdani, I don't know why he did this, and I can't tell you how the whole experience went because I was getting ready for this show, but he went on with Martha McCallum this afternoon a couple hours ago on Fox and answered questions about the campaign, and we have a little audio of that. He's not a fan of Netanyahu.
You have said that you would arrest Netanyahu if he came to the United States. You've been very outspoken in your criticism of him. Do you stand by that? You would arrest him if he came here, if you were mayor?
I've said that this is a city that believes in international law, and this is a city that wants to uplift and uphold those beliefs. The Prime Minister,
the United States doesn't stand by the International Criminal Court.
It hasn't signed the treaty for the International Criminal Court. The International Criminal Court, however, has issued a warrant for the arrest of Benjamin Netanyahu.
But
as
what
it has,
grounds in the United States could you arrest
as,
him on?
As it has for Vladimir Putin, I've said that I believe that we should uphold arrest warrants by the International Criminal Court, and that you should do so only in abiding with all of the laws in front of us. I'm not going to make a new law to ensure that we can actually
do this. Do you think that Commissioner Tisch would allow you to arrest Netanyahu in New York City?
I've appreciated Commissioner Tisch's leadership of the NYPD, and I think that she's done a good job at lowering crime across the city.
But do you think she would go along with arresting Netanyahu in New York?
I can tell you that I'm going to exhaust every legal option in front of me, not to make new laws to do so.
Okay, that's interesting. Good luck with that. Can he give President Trump any credit here on this peace deal? We'll see what he says here. This is in the category of audio that I have not heard yet because Fred just pulled it for us.
When it comes to the ceasefire, I am thankful and I have hope that it will actually endure and that it will be lasting. And I continue to have concerns because I've seen reports still just this in the last few days that five Palestinians were killed by the Israeli military. And that's what gives me pause about issuing any kind of praise or celebration at a moment when it is still so in its infancy.
But what was the circumstances of that? You said automatically because Israeli military killed five. So what were they doing, right?
Right.
That is an interesting question. What were the Palestinians doing that got them shot.
What I will tell you is that in that same moment, it is also one that requires a focus on ensuring that that hope, that belief in a better future is one that is emblematic in our policies right here in New York City as well. And that's what we're hoping to lead with.
So would you give President Trump credit or not, to any extent? Credit or not?
I think it's too early to do so.
Too early to say.
But if it proves to be something that is lasting, something that is durable, then I think that that's where you give credit.
I think he deserves, I mean, that's not an unreasonable answer there at the end. I think he deserves total credit for getting these hostages back.
Well, yeah.
Right? But, you know, this thing is no doubt fragile. And then I guess she asked about Hamas disarming.
Do you believe that Hamas should lay down their weapons and leave the leadership in Gaza?
I believe that any future here in New York City is one that we have to make sure that's affordable for all. And as it pertains to Israel and Palestine, that we have to ensure that there is peace. And that is the future that we have to fight for.
But you won't say that Hamas should lay down their arms and give up leadership in Gaza.
I don't really have opinions about the future of Hamas and Israel beyond the question of justice and safety and the fact that anything has to abide by international law. And that applies to Hamas, that applies to the Israeli military, applies to anyone you could ask me about.
Okay, a lot of blah. He's pretty slick, isn't he?
Oh, he's very
slick. He's very well spoken, and he's going to win this thing in a couple weeks, and it's going to be fascinating. You know, the thing that he says on the campaign is we're going to do, you know, President Trump said that he was going to lower costs, and we're going to actually achieve it. How?
Dude? Yeah, well, we don't talk about the house.
No, and so I'm very curious, you know, and I was in the camp very early on Mom Donnie to say, let New York City have him, right? See what he can do. Burn it down. Like, get, you know, there's going to be cops that are going to retire. Why would you want to be a police officer in New York when you don't get any support from the mayor of New York City?
I
would retire. If I'm on the cusp of retirement, hell yeah, I'm out of there, because we've seen what's happened in the aftermath of Mike Brown to these officers.
That's
and how
a good
they're
point, Mark. I wonder if there will be a mass exodus, or I don't know.
There has been some, you know, coverage along those. I don't know about mass, but look, people need their jobs too, and I get that. But if you're on the borderline of, you know, taking your retirement, you go get a private security gig or something like that, this will definitely lean you in that direction. This is kind of an interesting story, and I was trying to reference something here because there's something that happened with a kid by the name of Ed Korestein, who was working on Doge in D.C., and his name is Ed Big Balls Korestein, and I was trying to find out why he called himself Big Balls. Apparently, it was just a moniker he gave to himself.
Oh, okay.
He's very proud of himself, and he did it on LinkedIn, and somehow it stuck. But the reason that I bring him up is because he was attacked in early August and really kind of got the snot beat out of him. Here's how he recounted it with Jesse Waters on Fox.
I was hanging out with a group of my friends late at night, and at about 3 a.m. we were wrapping up, and I was walking one of my friends back to her car, and as we're walking to the car, there's a group of 10 guys right across the street, and as we get to the car and she begins to fumble for the keys, they start shouting at us, and really quickly I knew something was really off about the situation. So she unlocks the car, I rush her into the driver's seat. She's able to close the door behind her and lock the doors. And, you know, they, right as I turn around, they run up on me. They're just a few feet away. And they slam me against the car. They start throwing a bunch of punches. I keep my hands up. I'm just like, all right, I'm getting a lot of punches here. Let me just try to protect my head the best way that I can.
Okay, so he's kind of laughing about it there, but he was beaten pretty severely.
Why?
And there were, well, because he worked for Doge. But listen to this. This is exactly what's happening. So, you know, we tried to get rid of this here in St. Louis, and hopefully we have. But these were two 15-year-olds, all right? And by the way, it was 3 in the morning. So the story now is a 15-year-old boy and a 15-year-old girl who WSA 9 has agreed not to name were accused of assaulting Big Balls on August 3rd. On Tuesday, the 15-year-old was sentenced to 12 months probation. The girl pleaded guilty to simple assault, and she will serve 9 months probation. The judge emphasized that the purpose of the juvenile court is to rehabilitate, not to punish. She says she hopes the teenagers learn from their probationary period. It seems ridiculous.
All right, so they were wailing on you. Did they get you down on the ground?
No. I knew that if I got down on the ground, it'd get way worse. So I was like, all right, no matter what, I just have to stay on my feet.
All right, so stay on your feet. You protect the head because you know what? Big Balls also has big brains, and that's very important. And you saved this lady friend of yours. You kind of saved more than her car. You might have saved her life.
Yeah, it was a really bad situation. And, you know, the carjacking didn't make a lot of sense because Like, it was like the cheapest car on the block.
But, you know, what's interesting is they did not end up with a carjacking charge, which is a felony. So the male, the 15-year-old, pleaded guilty to four different charges. One was a felony. Now, apparently he is going to be on some home confinement, but it's kind of ridiculous. You got a felony, three misdemeanors. They're all violent, by the way. There was no gun involved. All right. Uh-huh. But still, this was a violent attack. The kid was from Maryland. He's at a D.C. parking garage at 3 a.m. So the parents are obviously keeping very, you know, good close watch on this. And it goes without saying, I think if a group of 10 white teenagers had attacked and beaten up a young black teenagers, that we would be, and if that happened at the beginning of August, we'd still be hearing about it now.
Get more at 971talk.com.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.